Hey, what's up, everyone? How are you? I am Ben Kissel with Henry Zebrowski.
I am here.
You are there. That's good. Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Without you, none of this is possible. And it's been such an unbelievable joy doing the Ben and Henry interview series. And today's guest, this dude is a beast. He's written 51 books, which is like, that's insane. His most recent book is The Slender Man Mysteries, an internet urban legend comes to life. Nick Redfern is with us. Mr. Redfern, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hey guys, well, thanks for having me on.
Dude, incredibly excited to have you here. You're the same thing as we've had Peter Davenport. He came and he spoke about his UFO experiences. We've had Stanton Friedman. It's been, yep. I'm starting to tick off all my coast to coast. I'm getting them all in my advent calendar of paranormal experts. Now, my question is what's the title you appreciate most? Like, are you a journalist first or are you a paranormal expert? Because you've written about every topic under the sun.
Over the years, I've been called a lot of things, some which I can talk about on radio, some which I probably get censored for.
Oh, there's no censors here. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. That's a good question, really. I mean, I don't consider myself as just like a UFO researcher or a Bigfoot researcher, right, or a Bigfoot expert, because at the end of the day, we're still all looking for answers, and it's hard to be considered an expert when we still are looking for answers.
Right.
So I would say I'm sort of a researcher and writer on the paranormal, because that doesn't kind of pigeonhole you, you know, into like one category. Because, you know, a lot of people do just focus on like cryptozoology or just on UFOs or just on ghosts. Whereas, you know, there's a lot of different things that interest me. So I guess paranormal researcher / writer, yeah, something like that.
It's interesting, and this is what I love so much about your research. It's so broad, it's so vast, but yet it lives under the same tent, whether it be paranormal activity, cryptozoology, or ufology.
Ufology. Don't put your UFO stuff in this.
UFO.
We can do a constant fight about it, calling UFO or UFO, and I say it's a UFO. You actually say the letters.
Well, whatever it is. And that's something that we do with here on Last Podcast on the Left as well. We do true crime, paranormal activity, cryptids. They all live under the same branch, which has been very difficult to convince television executives of, that they all interest the same people. What is the through line for you between the paranormal activity, between the research of aliens and cryptozoology? Is there anything that you can say that ties them all together for you?
Yeah, I mean, there are like a lot of controversial but interesting stories where people claim to have seen, like for example, when people have seen a Bigfoot, they've seen weird lights in the sky as well, like hovering around the Bigfoot. And then, you know, like with another UFO connection, there are people who claim to have been visited by the Men in Black and threatened not to talk about Bigfoot cases. So, those kind of stories are rare, and they're sort of like super weird as well. But the fact is, there are sort of crossovers between the world of cryptozoology and the paranormal. There are reports of Bigfoot vanishing in a flash of light. These strange dogmen stories, werewolf type stories.
I immediately just pictured Henry naked.
I'm covered in body hair because I am. I'm absolutely covered. I'm wearing a full suit of hair, and it does not stop.
Yes.
It's getting worse to get older, except for the very top of my head. But what is with dogmen stories? Why does every region have like a specific dogman? Like, what is it about that type of cryptid?
Well, what's interesting about them, you know, the sort of the term is like a modern day version of what you would call like a werewolf. But, you know, there are no reports apart from maybe just one or two or three at the very most throughout the entire history of dogman research, which goes back sort of 20 years. There really aren't any reports of where people claim to have seen something shapeshift, you know, from a human to a dogman and back and forth, like in the movies. They seem to be some sort of like an upright canine animal.
Wow.
But what's interesting is that you often find them at the same kind of places where you find other paranormal creatures, like, for example, old graveyards and cemeteries, old bridges, crossroads, things which are traditionally kind of tied in with the world of the supernatural. And I don't think the Dogman is like just an unknown animal. It's like with Bigfoot, you know, there are these weird reports where they seem to vanish in and out of portals. And
Because that's a part, the examples of high strangeness are the stuff that's hard to either explain, because there's no, it's hard to find physical evidence of stuff like that, but it's essential to the nature of a lot of these things, right?
Yeah, but the problem is a lot of researchers, particularly in cryptozoology and ufology, they don't want their own fields contaminated by this sort of weirder stuff. You know, they just want, the ufologists just want the UFO subject to be about nuts and bolts, right, craft and aliens, and the cryptozoologists don't want to hear about crossovers with aliens and men in black. So very often, those two categories, the people in those categories, very often overlook or just dismiss those types of cases. But for me, you know, they're sort of the get to the heart of it, because yes, these phenomena are real,
right,
but I don't think they're what a lot of people think they are. There's something much weirder.
That's interesting you say that. Quick joke here. I did see a dog man in Hollywood, Nick Nolte. Kind of funny
you
there.
You disgust me. You Nick are wasting Nolte. This man's time. You are wasting this man's time. He came all the way to the phone to speak with us.
And thank you for doing that, Mr. Redford. So it's interesting. You mentioned how UFO researchers, cryptozoologists, they don't talk. It sounds like, you know, pre-9/11 when the FBI and the CIA weren't talking. Or, you know, pre-real integrated police work between counties and communities when they weren't speaking. It seems like they're in competition with one another. What do you think could be figured out if everyone just got together and put all of their research together? Is that what you're kind of working on, an overall collage, so we can actually figure some of this stuff out?
Well, I wanted to bring it up more specifically, which was the concept of a universal theory of the paranormal, because that's been a thing that's been talked about for a while, right? Like the idea that there's some kind of underlying thing that connects Bigfoot and the UFOs and ghosts.
Yeah, well, I guess the one person who got more closer to the truth of that angle, which I think is the valid angle, it was John Keel, who sort of, you know, championed the whole Mothman phenomenon in Point Pleasant, West Virginia in the 60s, and he began to realize that so many of these phenomena were interlinked and connected. But it will take a lot, I think, to get hundreds of Bigfoot researchers to change their mind from Bigfoot just being an unknown North American ape. You know, that's just not going to happen. I mean, I've got a lot of good friends in the Bigfoot and cryptozoology community, but they just won't, a lot of them just won't tackle these sort of weirder things. So it's going to take a lot of combined efforts and changes in belief systems,
right,
because that's one of the problems. I always tell people, you know, in the world of the paranormal, we shouldn't really have belief systems. We should just go where the data takes us. And the worst thing you can do is just hide a story in a filing cabinet because you don't like it. Well, if you don't like it, that's just too bad. If the witnesses are telling you this or that and you start censoring them, well then, you know, you're doing the worst thing possible, really.
Yeah, you got to stick with the scientific method. So it's more difficult than just getting everybody together for a weekend at the Hilton.
No, but the problem is so many conferences, you know, they're geared just to what they think are going to get more asses on seats.
But I get it, though, because it's hard. These people need money, right? Like MUFON needs money. Like all these, so they're trying to figure out how do you break it down so it's as simple as possible, so people will give towards it. Like the Bigfoot community, they're just selling television shows.
You know, it's like a lot of them are kind of too just scared, you know, to rock the boat. And I think, you know, for me, I don't see anything wrong with rocking the boat, because by rocking the boat, we've probably got a better chance of getting the answers.
Right.
So I think, you know, I don't see anything wrong with having a panel on a Bigfoot conference where one's talking about the idea that Bigfoot isn't a known North American ape, or somebody saying it's a prehistoric ape, and somebody right next to them saying, well, I think it's extraterrestrial, and somebody else says, I think it's demonic. That's how it should be.
Right.
But in an ideal world. But I mean, you know, I go to so many of these events, and unfortunately, I just don't see it happening unless some major researcher in the subject who absolutely believes the flesh and blood angle, and then he or she has this life-changing experience which is clearly paranormal. I think that could change things around, but he would have to be like sort of one of the biggest figures in, you know, in the Bigfoot community to actually have people say, holy shit, you know, so-and-so actually saw, you know, a Bigfoot vanish.
Yeah, you need it from like an up top.
Yeah,
source.
Absolutely. Well, you gotta shake the tree to get the fruit. That's what they always say.
George Norrie would have to see it. It's like George Norrie would have to see it, and then he would have to write a jazz standard about it and then sing it at one of the conventions.
Beautiful voice on George. I want to ask one question here, just going back to your new book.
Yeah, I want to go back to Slender Man because that's such a good example of the pan theory, because it branches out from just like it started as an internet phenomenon and then somehow, yada, 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 through psychic involvement of hundreds of thousands of people, Slender Man is real.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? So again, the book, The Slender Man Mysteries, an internet urban legend comes to life. That's the most recent book from Nick Redfern. Go out there, buy this one, and then buy 50 more of them, because he has written 51 books, which is just insane. I know Henry has more of a maybe paranormal question. I have a question to you about how these things manifest themselves in real life. So we had the situation in Wisconsin, my home state. These girls brought their friends out to the woods. They stabbed her multiple times. Thankfully, she lived. And the girls said, these were 12-year-olds, said it was inspired by Slender Man. What do you think, you know, that does as far as like the mythos of Slender Man? Does that make him real to some degree if these folks are investing, really putting that kind of real energy into him?
Well, I think there's two angles to it. One is that there are some legitimate, infamous cases of attacks where I think people kind of just lost the plot, you know, and they sort of blurred the lines between reality and fiction, and they came to believe things, fully believed in something as a real entity, but it was just due to the fact that they had, you know, significant psychological issues. But then you have this other angle where people, have gone on the record as saying that they absolutely have seen the Slender Man, and they felt it was through concentration and focusing on it, they were able to create like a thought form version. In other words, the human mind focuses on an image, and if you've got thousands and thousands or tens of thousands of people all focusing on this image, it can create like a real world entity, but projected from the human mind. So I think you've got the paranormal angle, and you've also got the issue of people having psychological issues. But what's intriguing and disturbing as well is that both categories end up with like disaster and tragedy and death and murder, and there's no real phenomenon other than the Slender Man that is able to achieve or cause that to happen, which is interesting. You know, you don't find that with like the Black Eyed Children or aliens or Bigfoot, but with Slender Man, it's almost like there's this dark cloud descends on everyone who kind of really gets into it and starts to, you know, relate to it, and they get sucked into this sort of dark world.
Well, it's a very common, it seems to be like a kind of goth fixation, because it starts with the internet as a whole, especially because it's catering towards younger kids, and where Slender Man came from, Something Awful, was the whole point was to creep people out, right? Is it was trying to come up with what was the scariest thing that you could think of. So I think that you, one of the things you postulate, I believe in your books, you talk about how that it's some kind of archetypal figure that somehow people attached, they created this idea of what's really creepy, a really tall, skinny dude that like appears out of nowhere, and then when you take a look at the picture, it's like he's all the way in the background. Like, that's creepy as shit.
Right.
So when you make it real, it's gonna be dark too. Like, it's not gonna be like a fun experience when you during the process of making it real. And so then all of a sudden now it's going to attach all this murder and mayhem to it. But when it comes to the little girl, Anissa Wire, that was sort of like the ringleader of the stabbing, her father also suffered from schizophrenia. When I watched the recent HBO documentary about the stabbings, it seemed like she was also sort of parroting her father's symptoms, and then Slenderman kind of became a hook. Like, she kind of, like, she got attracted to that, and then it becomes a weird validating force for her to do something that got her attention.
Well, I mean, that's a good point. There's no doubt that a lot of people have been influenced, if you like, and sucked into this. And it's happened extremely easily and very quickly as well, to where they see the, you know, they start to relate to the Slender Man, which, you know, is not a good thing to do.
No.
And so you have this situation where people kind of, like, gravitate towards it, and they become obsessed. That's one of the interesting things about the story, is that it's hard for so many of the kids, teenagers, etc., who've got into this. It's hard for them to just have an interest. It goes from being... Well, it doesn't actually even begin as an interest. It almost begins as like a full-blown obsession where they cannot leave it alone, yeah. You know. And
Well, I remember as a little kid first hearing about Bloody Mary, and I remember being – I used to be subconsciously afraid that I would do it, that I would go into the bathroom, and that somewhere deep the little voice inside my head would do Bloody Mary, would say Bloody Mary in the mirror, and she'd show up because everyone
it works.
Had a story.
It works. Yeah, but,
I don't think it does.
It does, because
it
what happens, you turn off the lights, Bloody Mary, you turn them on, and just you see something in the background real quick, if you think
yeah,
about it.
Yeah, but we were also on mushrooms when we did that. You remember that was like one of the fifth or sixth times we hung out.
Well, that helps. You know, can we just change a little bit from paranormal? Paranormal?
I don't know. Don't want to let him go.
I want to ask. Oh, we have many more questions, but I just want to ask. I see the book here. You've also written about the New World Order, which is really a fascinating subject. I think, you know, it's becoming obviously the corporate overlords intertwined all over the world. They're controlling water. They're controlling, you know, food resources. What are your thoughts? Just a brief overview. Your perspective from this book, The New World Order.
Well, you know, a lot of people say, well, the government's doing this, the government's doing that. And where I differ to a lot of conspiracy theorists or people who have written about conspiracies is that I don't sort of put the blame on this government or that government. I think we are actually sort of dealing with powerful corporations, powerful figures, ancient families, banking. And I think subtly and behind the scenes, they're the ones who are manipulating the changes.
Right.
You know, you know, you have a lot of conspiracy researchers say, well, the U.S. government's doing this and they're doing that. Now, the end result may look like that, but I honestly do think it's sort of like a flexible but interlinked, powerful body of people mm-hmm. who worm their way into government. And, you know, they're so powerful, you know, old money, that they can manipulate even government.
Right.
So what looks like something the government's doing is actually, I think, you know, sort of ancient societies brought up to the present day who want to kind of have things run their way, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely fascinating. If you look at, like, the Federal Reserve, not technically a part of government. I mean, who are these people who are controlling the money and therefore controlling everything?
Who are these people?
What's the deal with these overlords?
So, yeah, I mean, you only have to look at how the world's changed in the last 20 years. And, I mean... You know, and there you hear sort of stories of, like, people getting chipped and implanted and...
the beast.
I mean, like, if you think, like, Amazon Alexa, you know, okay, it's cool technology, but I would not have something like that in my house.
I'm with you.
But this is the thing.
Picking up on every word,
yep.
You know what I mean?
Putting it on the stand as a smart witness.
Exactly. But part of what I think what's happening is that we're kind of... my theory... Good to come for you. Please just punch me in the face if I'm wrong.
You are away from both of us.
Yes, someone come attack me if I'm wrong. But a part of it is that I do believe that we have subconsciously put ourselves into the dystopia from the 80s that my entire generation was obsessed with, where it's like with like movies and shit, like essentially like we took RoboCop and we loved it so much as little
fun.
Kids is that
yeah.
we like we've like made it real.
Yeah, Boston, you know, Dynamics just came out with another video just showing like robots, they can think now and it can walk around and it can order from Dairy Queen.
Yes, and that now we're sort of in the college sophomore version of the future. future where Brave New World is correct and we're being smothered by our comforts?
Well, actually, you make a good point there, because a lot of people imagine if we're going to enter like a New World Order type world or something along those lines, or some dystopian world, that it's been forced on us. But you know, there's nobody kicking everybody's front doors down. What's basically right. happening is that if you look at, for example, just say one thing, like, for example, if you go back to the 70s when with Watergate, you know, Richard Nixon was brought down as president because he was bugging the Democratic Party. But today, you know, the NSA has the ability right. to listen to everybody. Yep. And we know that countless number of people are being listened to, but most people are like, well, that's just how it goes, you know. So in other words, it's happening because nobody cares to stop it.
Yeah, and because they want their diapers delivered on their front doorstep from Walmart or Amazon, everything just... The convenience, I guess, is the payoff, huh?
When's the last time you read a terms and conditions?
Oh, my God.
How many times have you just clicked agree? You click agree just to get to the porn. I'm just trying to see the breasts as fast as possible because I have 20 minutes before my sister comes home. So what I have to do is click yes and I agree. But this is a part of how it goes, right? Where it's like I feel like we've just all convenienced ourselves into this. And then at one point, Obama, I think, where especially as the spreading of the NSA's powers were happening under Obama specifically, where it's just like the idea is that, well, a well-tempered, smart leader will know how to use this very nefarious technology well, with skill. They will talk about it with judges. Go through all the red tape. But when you have a fucking moron in charge, like as what seems to be the case right now, is that then at their fingertips, they have an incredibly sophisticated surveillance system that they can just use at any time.
Well, the problem I have is not, which you kind of touched on, I don't have an issue with the technology. The issue I have is who it's being used against.
Right.
You know, and I don't have any issue with drones. I don't have any issue with the NSA listening in to someone if they're a genuine threat. But it's kind of like, you know, making some 85-year-old American woman, you know, take off her hat and, you know, have a bag checked, from head to foot, just because she wants to go and see her daughter in another state.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like common sense has gone out the window.
Oh, it's all
gone. And,
We don't need to look into an old woman's brassiere to see if a bomb's in there. I don't think we have to. And I tell them when they're doing it. I'm like, stop touching that old woman. I have a question. When you were in the middle of doing these things, so it's like you've reached the research of the NWO, Men in Black, which is a episode topic that I'm very interested in, that I'm probably using your book as one of my sources. So please, I will also want to maybe talk with you about that in the future. If you ever gotten a fucking like one of those like pulled over by a black car and they're like, hey, stop researching this shit. Have you ever been pinged? Do you ever feel like your phones have been tapped?
Well, I have had a few weird phone issues go on and a few similar things like that. But one of the interesting things about the Men in Black mystery that a lot of people don't know is that there seem to be two categories. Now, everybody outside of ufology, you think of the Men in Black, they think of Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones.
Of course.
They make it look good, yeah.
Well, one of them makes it look good.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. You're correct.
Thank you.
But in the movies, you know, they're presented as secret agents of this secret government agency. But if you speak to the vast majority of all the witnesses to the Men in Black, they describe them actually as not even properly looking human. They're sort of tall, skinny, pale. Mm. They have these large eyes. They hide behind these wraparound sunglasses. People talk about feeling mind controlled and hypnotized by the Men in Black. Mm. And that's the vast majority of the cases fall into that category. And
they have their like lips drawn on, right? And they're wearing weird makeup and shit.
Yeah, trying to look human when they kind of look like a cross between like a alien human hybrid and the Walking Dead. You know?
Right.
What is it?
That's interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I see also you have a book, the NASA conspiracies. You have a book on everything. And I want to ask you, my last question is just going to be like, what's your favorite thing to research? But right now, like, what are the Men in Black? Are they part of the U.S.? U.S. government? Are they part of some sort of intergalactic thing? Is it part of like NASA or what? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, my apart from the small number where people from government legitimately have gone out, and particularly in the 50s and 60s, you know, when the guys did wear black suits and black fedoras. So I'm pretty sure some of those reports in the 50s and 60s were of legitimate people in government. But if you look at the overwhelming number of reports, I think we're dealing with something that is in some way sort of supernatural. You know, the reports of men in black sort of literally vanishing in front of people. There are other cases where people have seen the men in black up close, and then within 24 hours or less, they've started to feel sick and really ill, as if they've been somehow like supernaturally infected. So there's a lot of weird stuff, and they even have the women in black, which is a subject I wrote a book on, and they're the same. They wear the, you know, they're often reported as wearing like long black wigs, and their faces are sort of overly painted to try and make them look more human when they actually really
so
don't.
So fun! Like, what are they even doing, man? It's like,
well, what are they doing?
Kardashians? I don't know, because that's the but that's a part of it where men in black. That topic lives in the pan paranormal universe.
Yeah, that's a great example of the ones that intertwine, right?
The same thing. Slender Man's the same thing, where Slender Man led from an actual meme to violence, where there's a bunch of gray areas in that are mostly seem to be explained by the human brain just being 3 pounds of jelly that puts shit together. And so all of a sudden you're looking at Men in Black, like, what if a Men in Black, for the most part, is like what we would call a gnome, or some kind of weird sprite entity that's mimicking human behavior for some reason? Are they on the payroll? Like, are they getting fucking benefits from the U.S. government?
I doubt that, but I mean, there are a lot of indications that the government knows about the Men in Black or knows there's a phenomenon, but even they may not really understand what the Men in Black actually are.
Yeah,
one of the big misconceptions, particularly with the public and the media and also to a degree within ufology, that there is this misconception that they're from the government, but they're not. You know, they're way, way weirder than that. I think something multidimensional with a lot of paranormal and even occult overtones. For example, there are people who've been visited by the Men in Black where there's no UFO angle, but the person has been using like a Ouija board the night before. Or even the night of when they turn up, in some cases.
Interesting.
You know, this fedora-wearing shadowy figure looming over the bed. So, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff that go beyond just flashing an ID card from the FBI or whatever.
Well, as soon as they show up with a fedora, you're like, oh my God, is this the Reddit police? Has Reddit come to arrest me?
We've downvoted you. Well, speaking of the government, I guess in 2004, that footage that was filmed by the Navy pilot, that UFO footage that was just recently released, I guess just to go back to UFOs, do you think that we're close to a major revelation in the near future of the existence of UFOs and maybe extraterrestrials?
You know, I'm honestly not sure. I'll tell you for why, because there have been times in the past when within ufology there were rumors that, you know, the government's going to come clean about this. There was one in 87 and 88 when it was big news, and then in the early 90s, and then you have people like Stephen Greer and Stephen Bassett, who've done, you know, a lot of disclosure, like the disclosure movement and, you know, initiations to try and get the government to come clean. And it's come close to it, allegedly, but it didn't happen.
Right.
So, you know, I kind of look at it as, is this just another example of, like, you know, the boy who cried wolf, and finally when the wolf turns up, nobody listens, you know.
Well, it's almost like maybe they did that on purpose.
What I actually think sometimes happens is that the government knows there's a real phenomenon, and so by putting out rumors, maybe the government's going to come clean, it actually allows the government then to judge how we react to it. Are people panicking?
Right.
Are they excited?
Right.
Could they just not give a fuck, you know? So in that sense, it's like, well, if you think about it, it's a good psychological way of determining how the mass public would react is
That's
by
a great
putting
point.
A rumor out and then just sitting back and see what the media says, see what the press says, see what it's going on CNN, what they're talking about, it, you know. And it's an easy way to understand the mindset of the public, and the, yeah. then it allows the government, whoever's hiding it, to say, oh, you know, this is still going to cause panic, you know, we better put it back another 10 years, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, obviously with War of the Worlds as an example of just mass hysteria, but I will say nowadays it seems like there's a lot of people just being like, come down here, help us out, we could use you.
Come get us.
Come get us whenever you want us.
Can I ask a more pedestrian question of you, Mr. Redfern? When you were on the, when you're on the circuit, with the other paranormal guys. So when you were out there, like, talking, like, doing in conventions and stuff like that, it's like,
yeah.
How, is that fun? Like, do you like, do you like being out with
those
other guys?
This is your Chris Farley show moment. So,
fun. I mean, you know, I mean, I enjoyed doing what I do. I mean, you know, I like to sort of work in the writing. I do sort of 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. That's how I like to do it. And that gives me weekends off and evenings off to have a good time. And it's the right. same with conferences, you know. I mean, it's fun. I mean, you get to sort of hang out and...
I know I still got it because last night I was I was chased out of a bar by a man screaming at me about 33rd degree Masons. He has information about the UFOs. And I was just like, I'm sorry, man, I have to go. Like, I'm off the clock right now. I need to go home. Like,
no, man, I got this evidence for you. I just have to show it to you in the bathroom. Third stall on the left. Yeah.
That's what he was trying to do. But it was good. Like, is it like that too?
Well, I mean, you know, it's one of these things where people go to the conferences, you know, to hear the lectures. But most conferences, you know, they'll have it in a hotel or whatever the building is, where, you know, there's a bar, there's a restaurant, or, you know, in better circumstances, there's not just one bar. You know,
right.
Everybody hangs out, has a good time, you know, and it's fun. And sometimes the conversation is UFO. Sometimes, you know, it's music. Sometimes it's something else. And people just hang out and have a good time. I think that's how it should be because,
yeah.
you know, I can't think of anything worse than going to a conference and speaking and then just sitting in your hotel room, you know, doing nothing. I mean...
I feel like some people, like Stanton sound tired, but he sound up for it, but that's why he's trying to get off the circuit because he was just like, it sounds like it was getting too intense for him out there on the streets.
You know, I could do this sort of 24/7, you know, sort of traveling around and lecturing and then getting on a plane to another place and another one. That don't tire me out. I enjoy doing that, you know.
Yeah.
How do you tell the difference between a good, genuine source and a crazy person? Like, how do you, when you are like, when someone wants to talk to you about something that they've experienced, like, how do you choose the difference that you are reliable or not?
Well, I think... I know that, you know, having sort of, you know, done research for various years and whatever and had a lot of interaction with people personally, you know, you become a good judge of character. And it doesn't matter if it's UFOs or somebody's talking about their views on the latest episode of some TV show or anything. You can kind of tell pretty quickly if a person is, you know, okay or if they're just some crazy loon,
right. Yes,
and or some sort of fantasist or a con man or anything like that. But you do quickly become a good judge of character, and I've always found that the vast majority of people who come up to you and want to share information or ask questions, they're just legitimately really interested, and you know, they just want a bit of help, you know, to know or to try and understand what it was they saw or to how to figure out what's going on. But it's like anything, you know, you're always going to find one or two people who are a little bit crazy or their ego's gone to their head and they start fantasizing about this or that. And
well, just to kind of stick in that like real world kind of nerd vein, I know that you did Penn and Teller's Bullshit, which is one of my favorite shows of all time, and I remember the episode you did Ghostbusted. And I know they're very skeptical. They're Penn and Teller. Did you meet Penn and Teller?
No, well, that's one of the things that, you know, has always been like an issue for me. I was, you know, they told me what the show was, and I knew exactly what it was, you know, because right. It wasn't like it was the first episode.
Yeah.
It was my hope, and my assumption, or granted I wasn't told this, it was just my assumption. I thought, you know, they would be there, and we'd be able to get like a good, fiery, controversial, entertaining arguments and debates, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Because that makes a good, you know, if you have a good you know, on-screen fight. It looks good.
Oh, and yes.
People like that. But the problem was, I never met them. What happened was a crew flew in from California and filmed it in Texas. And it was just me, the other three people who were interested in ghosts, the film crew, which was a cameraman, a sound guy, and the producer. That was it. And then they just packed up the footage and sent it back to California.
They could cut it into whatever it is they're saying.
Essentially,
and this crazy guy.
That's what I figured. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's kind of what they did. Yeah.
For me, I would have preferred it if it had been a real head to head, and people were like, "Whoa, you know, this is pretty cool. This is like it is like an online fight, you know, a head to head thing." And I think that would have made for great TV, but it turned out to be not what I hoped it would be.
Yeah, I get it. Yep, I know, it's amazing.
Yeah, but they would have to leave their studio.
Yeah, they would have to leave Los Angeles and, you know, even like have an intellectual debate. Regardless if they win or not, it doesn't matter. It's a lot of work for those kinds of people. But anyway, going back to your books, can I ask, do you have any other questions, Henry? Because I just want to ask, like, what's the best thing or what's your favorite thing to research?
Honestly, I would love to do this again at some point.
Yeah,
and talk
exactly.
About things more specifically, like
right.
What I like about your approach is that you've just done so much research, so you're just showing people the information you've gathered.
I know we got Bloodlines of the Gods, the Zombie Book, Men in Black, the FBI Files. I mean, there's just so much, such a vast array of content that you've put out. So yeah, I mean, I guess is there something that you like to research the most? Something that really sticks out to you as the most fascinating subject, or are they all kind of like your children, treated equally?
No, I mean, some of them are ones where, you know, the publisher said, you know, would you be interested in writing this? I'm like, well, you know, I'll give it a try, but it wouldn't be necessarily my thing, you know. I mean, politics isn't really my area, but, you know, I've done a couple of books on those subjects. But I mean, the Men in Black stuff, I've actually done four books, and I've got a new one on the Men in Black coming out next month. So that's one of the big interests. Another big interest of mine is the Chupacabra phenomenon.
Oh.
I've been on a lot of expeditions to Puerto Rico and Central America looking for the original Chupacabra that started in the 1990s. So I did a book called Chupacabra Road Trip, which was sort of like the X-Files meets Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It was like me and a bunch of friends sort of going all around Puerto Rico, knocking back rum and God knows what else. And
that's the dream.
That's the dream. I love it.
Yeah,
Hunter S. Thompson hunts for chupacabras.
I just feel like if I got to your point where you're a respected paranormal researcher, I would just eventually be like, I need to go write a book about the ghosts of the beaches of Hawaii. And then just like go to Hawaii and be like, I'm seeing a lot of ghosts. And just me just drinking pina coladas, sending in chapters like Hunter S. Thompson.
You know, I guess in many respects, I sort of have a very different background to a lot of people in ufology, you know, or the Bigfoot field or whatever, you know. I mean,
yeah.
For example, at the conferences, some of the other speakers sometimes will say, oh, yeah, look, you know, there's Nick, and, you know, he looks out of place again. And what they mean by that is, you know, you see a lot of the older researchers, they got their suits on, and I've got like a Ramones T-shirt or a Misfits T-shirt, you know, whatever.
Right.
Or a Motörhead T-shirt and a beanie.
So you're getting ganged up by the nerds. The nerds are ganging up on you.
I actually don't own a collared shirt or a tie, but I own like six pairs of Converse All-Stars and about 20 black T-shirts and three biker jackets, and, you know, I've got like five piercings in each ear, you know?
Yeah, dude.
So in other words, I guess for me, you know, when they say, well, this could affect your reputation, saying, you know, you're running around Puerto Rico knocking back rum, I say, well, dude, I don't have a reputation. I've got nothing to lose, you know what I mean? I've got nothing to lose by saying this or doing that. I just don't care, you know?
Right. What was it about the chupacabra that drew you to it? Because that's kind of an interesting... Is the chupacabra a cryptid?
It is a cryptid, yes, Kissel. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, what basically... When people think of the chupacabra today, they think of this sort of dog-like, hairless creature that's been reported in, particularly in the south, you know, the southwest and whatever. But the original reports in Puerto Rico were like something not unlike the Mothman. It had like these a gargoyle type look with these bat wings, cool. Glowing red eyes. And it was attacked farm animals mainly. And this started in the 1990s. And I've probably been there now 7-8 times, and various other parts like Central America and Brazil and different places. And people talk about the chupacabra sort of draining animals of blood, like a vampire type creature. And so with the book I did on that chupacabra road trip, it was like a study of my first expedition about 15, 16 years ago to the present day. And it, as I said, it was sort of like a mixture of the X-Files meets Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, you know, sort of looking for the chupacabra in the day and then hitting the bars afterwards and putting all our data together and then and then seeking out the local strip club,
that's
you know, at the end of the night.
Just
that's
take
how
me, just take me with
be
you.
Done.
Take
yeah,
me
man,
with
let's
you.
Go, man. I want to go.
That's a great elevator pitch, by the way. If you want to sell this as a movie, that's a wonderful elevator pitch you just gave.
Dude, I also would love to send you, we did an episode on the Puerto Rican Chupacabra, and I'd love for you to hear your take on it, because that is the more interesting end of it. Because the Chupacabra in Texas, it just sounds like it's a dog. Like, it's obviously some kind of animal doing this shit. But the stories that come out of Puerto Rico are crazy. And like, it's shape-shifting, it does all this stuff. It's a great cryptid story.
Wow.
But
I'd so
love
Henry,
for you,
you
to
just,
get your opinion.
You just did the equivalent of like, can you read my book? Yes. I'm the biggest fan.
Yes,
can
I
you,
did.
I wrote a book. yes. Well, thank you.
Please.
Yes. As Henry said earlier, we got to have you back because, yes, because you know so much about so many of these interesting topics, and I'm sure we could continue to talk for a long time. But I know you have a life, and you probably want to have a Sunday and go and hang out with your friends. So,
oh, it's all good. I'm always, you know, always happy to do radio because, you know, like right now, you know, you have an interesting conversation, which, like I said, is nothing like, you know, 20 questions like you know, on a panel debate, which to me
right.
is like as boring as hell, you know. You want to be able to sort of fire it up a little bit and have some fun with it as well.
This Absolutely. Is our whole lives. So we've tried to turn fun into a job, and it's both exhilarating and very stressful.
All right.
Because
Nick Redfern, The Slender Man Mysteries, an internet urban legend comes to life. That's his latest book, and it sounds like you got another book coming up very soon here.
Yeah, it's the fifth book I've done on the Men in Black, but it covers Men in Black, Women in Black, Black-Eyed Children. So the book's called The Black Diary, because it's
cool.
basically like written in a journal style of all the investigations I went on looking for the Men in Black.
You believe in Black-Eyed Children? Like, you believe Black-Eyed Children are real?
Yeah, I do, but again, I think it's like a paranormal phenomenon. You know, some people, you know, sort of bordering on the occult, some people think, other people think they're literally kind of demonic, you know. But
nice.
There's so many cases and a lot of really credible witnesses that, and it's more the witness credibility than anything else that makes me think, well, you know, this person is not crazy, you know, they're just a regular person.
We need to have an extended conversation about this
next,
at some point.
Next
I want
interview.
To talk about Black-Eyed Children, yeah, because
yes,
that's like a thing I've been obsessed with for a really long time. Marcus, our producer that works on our main show, he never wants to talk about it because he's like, ah, oh, whatever, it's just Black-Eyed Children. I was just like, I mean, let's do this shit. I was like, I want to talk about it. So
awesome. The Black Diaries coming out soon. And please, Mr. Redfern, you got to come back on and we'll just talk about that. We'll keep it more focused, but this was just so fascinating. Thank you so much for being on the show.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for having me on. And yeah, just any other time you want me on, just give me a shout.
Do you have anywhere you want us to want people to find you on Twitter or Instagram?
Yeah, well, the best way people can reach me, I have a blog called World of Whatever, and if you just type in Nick Redfern World of Whatever, it'll take you to the link. Or you can reach me at Twitter, Nick Redfern UFO, also at Facebook. There's 5 or 6 Nick Redferns, but just scroll down and you'll see me wearing a Motorhead beanie and looking at the camera.
Hell yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much, man. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Live from your grave.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. That was, dude, that was a great one.
He's cool as shit.
Yeah, he's like very cool. And
when you look him up too,
it's funny because usually they look like you, but then he described himself as like someone who was like, I want to hang out with.
Yeah, dude, he is. He looks like Grant Morrison.
Yeah,
like, he's got
awesome.
That vibe. A lot of black t-shirts, and I like the idea that he doesn't fit in with the other ufologists.
Well, that's a good thing.
Where
that's a good thing.
Our goal is to combine the worlds, Kissel. Is that we need to get the nerdy ones and the rock and roll ones together. And that's where we lie.
That's true. Awesome. Yes, that's very true. Yeah, so check out Nick Redfern. He's got, yeah, again, 51 books. I'm sure you guys will all enjoy that. Is there anything else we want to say? We got, I don't know. I think that's pretty much it.
Just don't stop giving us your money.
Well, I don't. Now you don't have to grovel.
Don't
for
you
it.
Fucking even think.
All
to stop
right, me. Everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening. Hail oh, yourselves. God. That's
Hail
Eric.
Satan.
I'm Ben.
Triple L.
We're not doing the triple L. It's not catching on. Hail yourselves. Talk to you soon.